The way the Great Resignation is going, you would hope that organisations are getting a bit of a wake-up call, or really not organisations because they are just entities, but leaders in organisations are having this wake-up call and going, actually, we need to obsess over the employee experience. It's not a given that people will just stay in their job because they get a paycheck. The last couple of years have in many ways been a gift because it's gotten people more in touch with what really matters and what life is like when you spend more time at home and more time with the people that you love because you're not spending 5 to 10 hours a week commuting. I think that that can only be a good thing. I think that hyper flexibility has got to be the way of the future.
Welcome to the Virgin Active Minds podcast by Virgin Active, where we dive deep into conversations with the best and the brightest minds in the health and well-being world. If you've got questions about health, exercise, or any dimension of well-being, we've got the answers one expert at a time. I'm Mark Cito, your host, because I love all things well-being, from exercise, work, relationships, and going deep inside our minds. I'm here to explore it all with you. This is what they came for. Welcome back to part two of our conversation with Amantha Imber. If you haven't checked out part one yet, then I would suggest skipping back to last week. Have a listen to that part one episode first, and then join us back here for part two. Otherwise, here we are. What's your thoughts on the, you know, the 38-hour work week? Is there any science behind that being the right thing?
Yeah, well, look, in terms of productivity reduces after, I think it's about a 55-hour working week. So, you know, 38 is quite an arbitrary number now, particularly for knowledge workers. At Inventium, and look, also the other thing with the standard 5-day working week, and this is research that Andrew Barnes, who's the co-founder of the 4-day week movement, often speaks about, is that we're really only truly productive for 2.5-3 hours a day. So even though we're at the office or a virtual or a home office 5 days a week, we're not actually productive for 5 days a week. You know, we're doing things like checking social media, or we're in meetings that we really didn't need to be at, or we're in our inbox, but we're not really processing email. We're just rereading emails that we've already opened 10 times because email gives us this false sense of productivity. So at Inventium, just after the pandemic hit, we decided to trial the 4-day week. We already have very high productivity as a team because we train other people to be productive, and we're not like the plumbers with the leaky pipes. We do very much practice what we preach at Inventium. But we thought, well, could we achieve all our company goals in 4 days, 4 normal length days, but with the 4-day week concept, you still pay people a 5-day salary or a full-time salary, and you expect the output that you would expect of a full-time worker or employee, but you're just working like 4 8-hour days. So we ran that as a 6-month experiment at in the last half of 2020, which is a challenging time because a lot of us were in Melbourne and we were, you know, locked down for a lot of that period of time. But we found during that 6 months that that like every hypothesis that we were testing was supported. So everything from, would engagement increase? Our engagement levels were already very high. They were in the top 10% for our industry, management consulting. They rose to the top 1%. Productivity increased by about 25%, which was we were quite surprised at, given what I said before, we're very productive already. And we hit our financial targets 2 months early, which was, again, quite phenomenal in the middle of a pandemic as a consulting business. So we made it permanent, and now we've been doing the 4-day week for nearly 2 years. So it will be 2 years in July 2022, and it's been amazing. And I don't think I could go back to a normal 5-day week after doing the 4-day week. Yeah.
Wow. Thank you for sharing that.
What day do you have off, Monday or Friday?
We had a big discussion about that as a team. So before we launched it, we ran a pre-mortem. And a pre-mortem is where you future project with an idea and you go, what if this idea is a complete and utter failure? Why? Mm-hmm. Why was it a failure? And this is a great way to proactively mitigate against a lot of the risks that are inherent in any idea. Any idea is risky because we can't predict the future. And that sort of brought up a lot of things. And so one of the key decisions that we did actually have to make as a team is, will we all take the same day off or will it be different? And we did actually decide that we would all take the same day off. So it's Friday. We all have Friday off. We call the initiative Gift of the Fifth because you get the gift of time on the fifth day of the week if you're able to be fully productive from Monday to Thursday. And we did actually track during that experiment how many so-called urgent inquiries or, you know, client questions or things did we get on the Friday. And I think it was maybe 3 or 4 over the course of 6 months.
Right.
Like nothing. And it's like, we're not neurosurgeons. We're not heart surgeons. No one's going to die. You know, the team generally would check their email once or twice on a Friday. So it's not like we're just disconnected from work. And I should add, that is not mandated. People just do that because I think, you know, people are, you know, very loyal and committed to the business and their clients. And so they just naturally do that. But, you know, they're like not at their desk working all day. So we all take Friday off and every weekend is a long weekend.
Beautiful. I love that. I've got some suggestions for...
Yeah, how would that go down at Virgin, Mark?
Yeah, we'll find out. I'll let you know. When it comes to schedule and, you know, your structure for the week, there's, for me personally, if I wake up on a Monday and see my calendar absolutely jam-packed, it feels paralyzing. Equally, if I wake up and it's completely empty, which is a rare occurrence, but sometimes, you know, you wake up and you're like, actually, that can feel demotivating, right? It's like, oh, like, how do I even get started? Are there types of people that absolutely, like, they need that full structure? I want to see everything in my calendar full because that motivates me and keeps me going. But equally, are there people that just like, oh, I need space, like, get me out. You know, I'm going to cancel this, cancel that, cancel that. And is there a perfect balance for everyone?
I think that there are solutions for either of those challenges that you've said. And I think either situation can be stressful for most people. So in terms of being 100% booked, I think a lot of people are in that situation, particularly with back-to-back Zoom meetings, which is a reality of most people that work in the large corporates that we help at Inventium. And I remember a while ago now, I interviewed Darren Murph from GitLab, and his job title is Head of Remote. That is his title, which is a cool title. And something he shared with me is that he avoids being booked 100%. So he will always have buffer time in his diary because he says without the buffer time, like if you're just back to back, you know, where's the room for like spontaneity and innovation? And also where's the room if things go wrong, like if one of his children has some emergency at school and he has to go pick them up, that's going to throw out not only his day, but everyone else that he's interacting with. And it's like the flow and effects are not great.
Mm-hmm.
So he has a rule that he'll never be booked 100%. I also heard the same thing from Nikki Sparshot, who's the CEO of Unilever for Australia and New Zealand. And she's the same. She'll always schedule about 90 minutes of buffer time in her diary in the afternoon almost every day. And for her, that's just a chance to actually just think and do deep thinking and not just have her day be reactive. So I think that's really good advice. But on the flip side, if your diary looks completely empty, look, there are some people that do love that. But I would say what I think is more useful is being very cognizant of what are your priorities, like what are the most important things and impactful things that you could be doing with your time, and doing using a strategy called time boxing or time blocking, which is basically where you make meetings with yourself in your diary for the tasks that you want to be working on. So for me, I don't have that many meetings every week. like I would say on any given day, I would only have 2 hours of meetings, maybe 3 hours of meetings on a particularly busy meeting day, which is not all that much because I think most people would probably have more like 5 to 8 hours worth of meetings on many days. But my diary looks full because every week I think about what are the things that I want to achieve this week? What are the things that will have the biggest impact on the biggest projects I'm working on? And I will book meetings with myself, separate meetings for separate tasks, and that will be in my diary. And so I might have a 1 hour meeting with myself to, work on an article that I'm writing for Harvard Business Review, or I might have a 2 hour meeting where I need to review a keynote presentation and try to create some new content or some new stories. So that keeps me focused, and it also stops me negotiating with myself and going, oh, I could do that, I could do that, or maybe I'll just hop onto ABC and check the news. Like, if you know, like we've all got the propensity to procrastinate, but it's a lot harder if you kind of know what you're meant to be doing, because then you can just have that meeting with yourself and work on that task.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I find myself sometimes waiting for the white spot in the calendar. You know, it's like I'll get to that when there's a gap. But what you're saying is that, you know, don't wait for the gap. Actually create a meeting with yourself.
Exactly. And gaps are fine. I will normally have gaps in the afternoon because if it takes longer to do a task that I scheduled for 1 hour, I can then play catch up in the afternoon. Likewise, if I've got actions from meetings, then I've got like a little bit of time to action whatever needs to be actioned without feeling stressed and having tasks carry over to the following day. So have the white space, but you don't need too much of it.
Yeah, okay. Now, I've heard you talk about deep focused work. Would you say that's similar to, I guess, being a yoga teacher, being in flow?
It's a good question. And I think the answer is no. So deep work is a term coined by Cal Newport, who's a professor at Georgetown University in the States and wrote a book called Deep Work, along with many other best-selling books. And he talks about two different types of work that knowledge workers can engage in. So knowledge workers being people that are paid for the value of the thinking that they bring to their organization. And deep work is work that requires intense concentration and an absence of distraction to do really well. And typically at least an hour or two uninterrupted in the diary, whereas shallow work is less cognitively demanding work. And, you know, it might be things like checking email or instant messenger, Slack, those sorts of things, updates, meetings, WIPs. So with deep work, sometimes you can get into flow, but don't expect to, because deep work is challenging work and often it can feel really hard, like you're pushing through and you're not actually getting into that flow state because concentration can be hard. So I find that it's kind of one or the other. It's like it's feeling like you're really having to push through and concentrate and work hard and it's tiring, but then other times there is that feeling of flow. So I know Cal writes about this and talks about this, that, yeah, you shouldn't expect deep work to, like, feel like you're getting into flow.
I see what you're saying. So it's not necessarily, you know.
It's like you don't lose track of time necessarily. Like sometimes it can feel like a real hard slog, and that's why it's really hard, because when you're feeling that sense of, you know, maybe anxiety or like fear that you're not good enough or those negative emotions that like pushing through something that's really hard gives you, it's really easy to just go, I'm going to relieve that negative emotion by checking my email, because that'll make me feel good because that's easy and I can do that.
Triggered. Should all of our work be deep work?
Well, more of our work should be deep work. I think the thing that occurred to me when I read Deep Work many years ago now is that what the book states is shallow work is very addictive. So we're getting that dopamine hit from shallow work because, you know, we never know when that next good news email is coming from. And so we're compelled to check our email or, you know, instant messenger every 6 minutes according to research from Rescue Time, which is a lot. So shallow work is very addictive. And in this world of digital distraction that we're living in, Cal argues that we run our days doing, like, spending the majority of our time doing shallow work because that's where we're getting that dopamine hit after dopamine hit, and it feels really good, but it's not all that productive. And deep work gets deprioritized. And when I read that, I remember going, oh my God, that's me. And I'm a knowledge worker. Like, I'm paid for the value of my thinking, but I'm prioritizing email over producing important writing or presentations or, you know, other things that I was doing at the time. So that was a huge light bulb moment for me, where I completely changed the way I organized my work days, where for the first 2 or 3 hours of every day, assuming like I don't have, you know, like a keynote presentation or a podcast interview, I'll be at my iMac doing deep, hard work that I have scheduled in my diary through time boxing. And I prioritize deep work, and my output has increased infinitely since I made that switch.
Is there anything you do around that? Like, do you have a certain desk or environment that you set up, or do you take your phone into another room? Like, is there anything?
Yeah, I will almost always put my phone on Do Not Disturb and leave it in another room as well. I will close down distracting applications. So I'll close down my email software or email client. I'll just close down anything that I don't need. And I'll often go full screen. Like, if I'm writing an article, I'll often go full screen, like in Word, through pressing, you know, the little green expand button that most people never use. If I'm going to take a break, I try to make it like a short walking break or movement kind of break, as opposed to a break to get into my inbox, which I find like it's too addictive. Like, I stay in my inbox. My inbox is my Achilles heel. So on a bad day, I'm in my email too much. So even though I talk and write about productivity, I'm definitely not perfect. And email is definitely my Achilles heel. Like, social media, not so much. I don't really feel compelled to bend any social channels. I reckon fighting a bit of a news addiction during, many of the lockdowns in Melbourne. But again, I've kicked that. I've broken that habit. So really, email is the thing that I do still find challenging. But yes, but then, you know, there's also software that you can use. So Freedom.2 is, Freedom's the software. Go to Freedom.2, which is website and application blocking software. So you can set it so that you literally can't access the things that you find addictive and distracting when you're doing that deep focused work. So I did use that. I sort of used that intermittently, but I used it a lot when I was trying to retrain my brain how to do focused work, which after many years of prioritizing shallow work is very hard to do. It's like, starting a weightlifting routine at the gym and just going, okay, I'm going to start by benching 100 kilos. No, that's really hard, if not impossible. So, like, if you like not used to doing deep focused work during your day, don't start by doing 2 hours. Like, start by doing half an hour where you switch off all distractions and build up from there. That's certainly what I did, and that worked well. It's quite depressing if you just go, I'm just going to focus for 2 hours, because it feels quite horrible if you're not used to it.
Mm. Yeah, and potentially, you know, like the bench press, you're setting yourself up for failure, which is definitely not where the place you want to be when you're trying to make a change. Look, I think there's a lot in there for a lot of people. I can hear everyone writing their notes right now thinking, I'm gonna try that. The future of work, what's your thoughts on how, you know, what the future of work looks like? How do we prepare for it? Is it going to be less stressful and more balanced?
Well, look, the way the Great Resignation is going, you would hope so. Like, you would hope that organizations are getting a bit of a wake-up call, or really not organizations, because they are just entities, but leaders in organizations are having this wake-up call and going, actually, we need to obsess over the employee experience. It's not a given that people will just stay in their job because they get a paycheck. People have realized that, you know, like, I mean, the last couple of years have in many ways been a gift because it's gotten people more in touch with what really matters in their life and what life is like when you spend more time at home and more time with the people that you love because you're not spending 5 to 10 hours a week commuting, which is a lot of time. Mm. So I think that that can only be a good thing. And I think that, you know, really like hyper flexibility has got to be the way of the future. Like after 2 years of building new habits where we have had increased flexibility to varying degrees, depending on your workplace, I think it would be very, very hard for leaders to go back to less flexibility and keep staff engaged and not, like, I just think they would vote with their feet.
Mm. Yeah, okay. And as podcast host, how I work, again, you speak to a lot of successful people. And if we talk more about the people side of things now, what do you think are the characteristics that really define successful people?
From what I've learned on the show, I think like a big thing is that they're really deliberate in how they use their time. But my latest book is called Time Wise, and it's basically pulling out about 100 of the best and most unique tips and tactics and habits that I've heard from people on the show. And the name Time Wise is really deliberate because I think that that's one of the biggest differences. They use their time really wisely and they're really deliberate in how they use the same amount of hours that we've all got in our day, but they use them really wisely.
Mm.
And I reckon that is a huge differentiator.
Right, okay. So some of the things we spoke about in scheduling meetings with yourself, figuring out what type of work, was there a definition for that? Chronotype.
Chronotype is. Right, yeah, okay. Yeah. So, for example, you know, I remember a few years ago speaking with Dan Pink when he wrote the book When, he learned about chronotypes and he completely restructured how his days work. So Dan Pink, you know, New York Times bestselling author of Drive and When and The Power of Regret is his latest book. So yeah, that like they think really deliberately about how they use their time. And I think that's why their output is so humongous.
Okay. And when it comes to the workplace, what do you think defines a great workplace? And what do we do if we think that our workplace needs to change?
What defines a great workplace? And look, this is something that we actually assess at Inventium. So we partner with the Australian Financial Review in creating their best places to work list every year. And that comes out on April 27th. 2022. Not sure if this episode will be released after that though. And we assess how good are the different workplaces in Australia. And we do that based on self-determination theory that I referred to before. So, you know, how much autonomy do individuals, teams and leaders feel? How much are they given? How much freedom? We look at mastery in terms of, you know, how is learning prioritized? And those sorts of things at the individual team and leader level. We look at connection, to how connected are people feeling. And we also look at purpose. Do people feel like there's a strong sense of purpose that their organization has that they identify with? So broadly speaking, that makes a good workplace. But I think it could just come down to the simple question for people: do you get excited to wake up on a Monday morning?
Mm.
Like, it doesn't have to be more complex than that.
Mm, okay. Other than that question and looking at time, what would be another, you know, based on the experience that you have working with the clients that you have, what would be another thing for the listeners right now to consider when it comes to their doing their best work?
Mm. One tip I got from Rachel Botsman, who is a trust fellow at Oxford University, and she's done some very popular TED Talks on collaborative consumption and the relationship between trust and technology. Something she used to do annually, which she now does once a month, is creating, instead of a to-do list, she creates a to-don't list. And she gets really specific around what are the things that she has been doing that are really sucking the life out of her or de-energizing her. And she's really deliberate in going, okay, I'm going to stop doing that. And I really love that because so often, you know, like we're presented with different opportunities and we, you know, feel obliged, particularly if we're people pleasers, as, you know, I certainly have the tendency to be, to just say yes to things. And, you know, there's FOMO if you say no. But being really deliberate in actually what you say no to can help you use your time far more wisely, because by saying no, you've just freed up a ton of time.
Mm. Which is a hard thing for a lot of people to do, right?
Definitely. It's a really hard thing for people to do. And, you know, saying no doesn't just have to be in the realm of work. It can also be in your personal life. Like, so for example, Rachel, you know, will like as on her to don't list has had things like don't spend time with such and such person because they're a bit of a dementor, you know, like they I don't think she used the term dementor, but you know, the sort of person that sucks the life and energy out of you. So I'm just going to say no if they ask me for a coffee. So it doesn't just have to be limited to your work life in terms of your to don't list.
Okay. And a question for you, what do you want more than anything else in this life?
For me, as I said, I'm very driven by impact, and I want to, with the ideas that I put out into the world, help people get more joy from what they do for, you know, about a third of our waking lives as adults that we do work. And if I can help people bring more joy and meaning to their work, then I feel like that was time well spent for me.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, Amantha. It's been such a pleasure to have you here on the podcast. I think there is so many things to take away from this chat. So I really, really appreciate it. Guys, if you haven't checked out Amantha's podcast, How I Work, even more great stuff in there. So please check it out. Amantha, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me, Mark.
So many great tools in here. I will definitely be booking in more meetings with myself and leaving my phone outside the room. It was also reassuring to hear that there are other owls out there who sometimes do their best work in the evening. And I think I need to share that with my colleagues. Thanks so much for pressing play. If you're loving this podcast, then please hit subscribe and tell a friend about us. We'd also love a rating on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Until next time, bye for now.